Oh, hi. Well, I know it's been a little while since we've last gone through and talked with one another, and want to just go and say I'm sorry, very sorry. We are so sorry about the delay. Which brings me to episode 196. We're sorry about the delay. Not only does that, of course, go through and talk about the show itself, which of course I normally was supposed to have recorded last week, but I have started working again. I've no longer been furloughed, and that created some, some less free time in my schedule, so to say. And I ended up having to cancel the recording from last week, moved it over to this week. So, sorry about the delay. And yeah, I guess that can kind of bring me into like the weeks in gaming and just kind of like the catch up on IRL stuff, which the big news is, of course, I have started working again. It's been a little over a week now, back at the theaters, and it's been a very roller coaster of an experience, so to speak. As you know, I got a call there. I think it was the 30th of August, and that I was to return to work on September 4th. They were going to go through and get ready to open the theaters, and the one location, it was return to work on the 4th to have the theater ready by the 18th, and then the other theater would then go through and rehire its staff on the 18th to then reopen on October 2nd. And then between the 30th and the 4th, that plan changed. So in just a few days, it went from, a staggered opening of where we had 2 weeks to open one location and then 2 weeks after that to open the other. Both of the locations are just, they're going to go through and they're going to open on the 11th. So we're pushing everything forward and we're going to open both locations in 1 week. Well, that was stressful, so to speak. And that was a lot of running around, some longer hours, some early mornings, some a little bit into the evening, and it was it was beginning to become a nigh impossible task. And it wasn't until that Wednesday that they had went through, and of course when I had delayed the episode, that they had said, well, we're going to delay the openings of both of them back to the 18th, and giving me some time. But it still was, even though that was an immediate like weight off of my shoulders about everything that had to go through and get done, which it definitely was an impossible task because we barely finished going through and getting the one location ready to open for this Friday, the 18th. But still, it was it was going to be quite a bit of work in order to go through and get both of them done. And then yesterday, the news came down that we're actually delaying the opening of the other location until October, kind of to coincide with the original plans. But a lot of that has to do with movie delays, not so much whether the building itself is ready to open, which it is. Both of the locations, more or less, with a few little things that have to be taken care of, are more or less ready to open. Maybe not at, full capacity or with county guidelines 50% capacity, because we still have some projection issues that I'm working on. They just don't see it worthwhile to go through and open the other location because we've had a lot of movie delays. One of the biggest ones, of course, being Wonder Woman was supposed to release early October and is now December. But even some other smaller movies, such as the new Gerard Butler film, Greenland, was supposed to open next week, and that one has now been delayed. And so now the company is kind of like, well, we've got nothing to play. And that's one of the big problems that was the movie industry was kind of going back and forth with. Someone had to take the first hit, whether it's the studios releasing a film, and dedicating to a release date for the movie theaters to have something to play when they reopen, or the movie theaters just reopening and playing old films, in order to have the studios be comfortable enough to begin to release movies. And eventually, the studios won out that game of chicken, and the movie theaters have begun to reopen, with very little to play. You've got Tenet, you've got like 800, Infidel, Nest, The Secrets That We Keep. Things like that. There's a bunch of like smaller and independent movies and things of that nature with which to play, but nothing besides Tenet that is really going to draw in too many crowds. And I use the term crowds loosely because if you look at like the nationwide box office numbers, it is poor, extremely poor to say the least, even though that the entire industry is beginning to reopen, but no one is going and watching movies. And I want to say, even though that my job kind of depends upon it, I think that's for the best. Medical experts have gone through and said that, going to a movie is probably one of the worst things that you could potentially do in the middle of the pandemic. The virus COVID-19, spreads through air conditioning. It thrives in colder environments, and the main factors of the transmission of the disease is distance and time. The closer you are to someone, the less time that you have to spend with them to have the disease transmitted over to you, because it's all just probability. You're just waiting for that one, particulate, to come out, out of their mouth, out of their nose, past the mask and into your mouth or into your nose, or however else that it's going to actually like transmit into the body. And there have been studies that, the virus can transmit, well past 6 feet. It just requires time. And you're sitting in a well air-conditioned environment, recycling the air for 2, 2.5, 3 hours, watching a film. And it's not safe. And that's not even to say, the company going through and putting together all these policies, and I want to say that it really floored me with just how much like the company is going through to make the environment as safe as possible. We put a ton of work, into the HVAC systems, to make sure that everything is working properly, that it is monitoring the humidity levels and bringing them down to as low of a point as possible, which will help stop the transmission of the virus by pulling those particulates out of the air as it goes through the HVAC system. At the end of the day, you're sitting in a closed environment for 2 hours with a whole bunch of strangers who, with a large majority of them probably not wearing masks, because the only way that we'll stay in business is to sell you drinks and popcorn, and that means that you're not wearing your mask while you're eating popcorn or drinking your soda. So it's just it's such an interesting, and interesting is the wrong word. It's such a weird place to be in, really, because on one hand, well, it's nice to have a job again, it's nice to be working. On the other hand, it's not really, like in the public's best interest. Like me working inside the theater and knowing what I do, if we follow every single one of the procedures, cleaning procedures and stuff like that in the world, it's not gonna stop the transmission, because it doesn't matter how well we clean those seats, it's not the particulates left over from the people in the previous showing, it's the people sitting with you in the theater while you're watching that film. And it's just not good. I think that at least for the most part, people get that, and that's why even theaters that have, reopened, even in areas of the country that might be a little bit more loose or not care so much about safety and guidelines and the virus and such, without getting too political, their numbers are still complete garbage in terms of people actually going to the theaters and watching movies. Which means that studios, even though that the theaters have reopened, studios are going through and seeing these box office numbers and being like, "Nah, we're not releasing our films." So you have these big titles that are continuing to be delayed, and then the movie theaters are just sitting there. "Well, we reopened because you said that you would release the films if we reopened. So now we reopen. We've incurred these huge costs, not just in the process of rehiring staff, bringing them back in, but a lot of, there's building deterioration of not anyone being in those buildings for 6 months to monitor and stuff like that. And then all the new safety guidelines. We've got tons of new protective, PPE, personal protective equipment. We've installed like plexiglass, barriers at like the concessions and box office stands. We're revamping lobbies to like move tables and chairs and such for social distancing requirements. We're installing hand sanitizer dispensers and making like wipes and all this other types of stuff available. And we've got all new like sanitizing equipment, so that way we can it's like a fogger that we put in between the theater in the theater in between shows to basically coat everything with like a disinfectant to make sure that anything that's left over is killed and dead. And these are pretty hefty costs, especially when you consider that it's not just one theater, it's like every theater that's going through and doing this. And then the studios are still like, nah. And now that we've reopened, it's actually more expensive than when we were staying closed. And so, my company ended up having to close like a quarter of its theaters during the shutdown. And that is the beginning. Regal and other companies are going to be going through and closing their theaters, probably by the end of the year. Just for the fact of the matter is that there's no money. No one's going and watching films. No one's collecting any income. The bills are still there. And now you're paying staff. You're having to go through and have huge upfront costs replacing all of the expired concessions, foods, and stuff like that. It is rough, to say the least. And then on top of that, it is just, probably one of the most unsafe things that you could do, in the middle of a pandemic. But yeah, that has been, IRL for the last 3 weeks in a nutshell. But I guess on some of the good side of, working again, besides collecting a paycheck, my insurance will be going through and kicking back in on the beginning of October, which means that the little thingy going on with my nose, the murder cells on my face, is now at least going to be covered by insurance. But I did have to move my surgery date to go back after the first. So what I previously had scheduled for September 30th is now towards the end of October. We'll see. I have to get the full. I have to wait till the plan is actually reinstated to get like the full pricing and all the other types of stuff. But after talking with the insurance company and what limited information that they could give to me, because the plan is not back in place, and then working with the doctor's office, so it sounds like it's probably the better thing to do, all things considered. And we'll wait and see. We'll have more information on that one the beginning of October. But yeah, it seems that if for nothing else, I hit my deductible and am well on my way to hitting my net out of pocket for the year, starting October 1st on that insurance plan. So positives, right? Looking at the positives on that one. But yeah, going into more gaming related news, into more somewhat, we're moving closer. We're not quite at the Diablo topics yet. We're moving into more gaming related stuff. So, sorry about the delay, but one of the big things that have happened since the last episode, maybe not pertaining so much to us, is the new Xbox and new PlayStations have had their prices and release dates unveiled. Actually, the PlayStation being, of course, just a couple hours ago before the recording of the show. And so we've got both of those consoles now launching more or less the same week, with the Xbox launching on November 10th, and then the PlayStation having a pseudo staggered release where on the beginning on November 12th, and then for like the major markets like Japan, the US and such, and then the rest of the worldwide launch on the 19th. And so they're both going to be more or less out there and available, that mid-November area, which, if you're one of those that are looking to go through and pre-order that, good luck. I know, as having been one of those ones where I've got to have it day one, that it can a lot of times be very frustrating trying to secure one of those consoles within the first couple weeks. But I think I'm sitting back on this one, not so much with cost or anything in regards to that, but just I don't have to have it day one. I don't even care until, like, you know, they announce God of War for the PS5 coming in 2021. That has stoked my interest. I'm really looking forward to that, and we'll have a console in my hands in order to go through and play that game. But until we have a firmer release date, that's... I'm going to wait for the content before I go through and pick up one of those consoles. But, you know, I am thoroughly impressed with what Microsoft is going through and doing with this generation of consoles. Maybe not so much with the hardware. Long time ago, I kind of got fed up with the console war. Everyone going through and wanting to examine the minutiae of, like, the architecture and who has more horsepower under the hood and all other types of stuff. To me, it really comes down to content. You know, what are the games? What are the exclusives that, you know, I want to play? And so any of the differences in the specs between the Xbox and the PS5 mean nothing to me. But Microsoft is doing something really good with going and having a more or less a lease-to-own system on their Xbox that's tied into the Game Pass service, where you can just pay, I think, for with the digital edition, which retails for $300 for the Xbox Series X or Xbox Series S for the smaller one. Or it's just like $25 a month on top of the Game Pass subscription, which is just... That is, you know, like, amazing. You know, if you're going to be subscribing to the Game Pass anyways, like, it just seems like such a no-brainer to, like, go through and uptake on that service, that you know, offering. And that is just something that everyone in this day and age is used to with, you know, phones, iPads, you know, tablets and things of that nature. You're already are like, you walk into the phone store, you know, you sign your two-year contract, and then you walk out with a phone, and your phone bill just went up by $20, and that's all that it is. You know, you didn't pay anything, and that's just, it seems like that is Microsoft is really looking at just like the trends in technology, the trends in consumer habits and spending, and is trying to change their business model to fit with how things are going, and you know. PlayStation, you know, they're coming in with pretty competitive pricing on their models as well. Their digital only edition is $100 more; it's $400. But then they both come in at $500, both the Series X and the PS5. The full editions with the disc drive. Who knew that a disc drive cost $100? You can get a DVD player for like $30, you know, on Amazon now. Can you duct tape that to the digital one and work? I'm joking, of course. But yeah, you know, it's pretty aggressively priced compared to like the launch costs of, you know, some previous generations. And I think it's interesting to see what becomes of this generation, because I think that we're just a couple more cycles away from not having disc or physical based media. And, you know, the fact that they're going through and selling these digital drives, like one of the big things I saw on Twitter is, you know, like GameStop selling the digital only consoles is basically, you know, like that's the Dodo, you know, selling hunters guns, you know, please kill me is what it's going through and saying. And so it's just, you know, the GameStop sad face that they're going and, you know, releasing the thing that is their downfall. And while I don't believe that, you know, the actual physical, like, disc-based media is on its way out. I don't even think that it's going to be on its way out next generation. I think it's still going to take, you know, easily at least, like, another 10 years or so before that has, like, full acceptance. Look how long that it took after, you know, iTunes to kill CDs. You know, you're talking... It takes a while. It takes a long time. You know, people don't like change. They like to hold on to the things that they're used to. And there's always just that little a bit about having that physical-based media or like that physical thing, you know, that it took me a while of going through and like buying books. You know, I mean, just looking back at the collection behind me and such, before I myself have transitioned to primarily just reading on my tablet. I don't really buy physical books too much anymore, unless it's something that, you know, I'm excited about and would like to have a copy on my shelf. And then a lot of times I still end up getting about halfway through the book and then just downloading it digitally anyways, because I like to read before I go to bed, you know, with the lights off and all other types of stuff. And reading in the dark is kind of hard with a physical book, a little bit easier on the tablet. Just my personal experience anyways. But yeah. And like I said, you know, this it's gaming related news. It's you know, for Diablo fans, it's like, you know, who cares? You know, we're still probably years away from the release of Diablo 4. You know, and even though that they do fully intend to support the consoles, I guess we will have like the official confirmation that Diablo 4 will be coming to the new Xbox and the new PlayStation. But you know, that's a little bit further down the road. There's not something that, you know, getting those consoles like right at launch, you know, matters to the Diablo community too much. But I want to say that there is a pretty large portion of the Diablo community that is that does play on consoles, primarily on consoles. And it seems to be almost growing. You see more and more console-based questions on Reddit as the weeks go by. And I really, really want to see how Diablo 4 is gonna do if they have that simultaneous release of the console and PC at the same time, where the trend will go to, instead of the PC version having that lead on the consoles, where the early supporters are going to be going through and, you know, buying it, you know, on the PC because they just want to play the game, even if, you know, maybe they've transitioned and console is their preferred way of playing. I'm not gonna go through and judge. I'm very far from being PC Master Race or anything along those lines. But it will be interesting to see where the trend goes, and how much of an impact of releasing Diablo 3 on the console will have had when we get to Diablo 4, and you see, you know, where does the market trend go? You know, what is going to be the ratio between the PC, which I believe will still be the dominant of the sales, and console? You know, could it get close to like a 60-40 split or something along those lines? We'll see. We will have to wait and see. But yeah, you know, actually going through and now transitioning into some Diablo news, which again, I am sorry about the delay. Is that we have no new news. We did have the update, like I talked about on the previous episode, that there is going to be a slight delay on the PTR, and that there will be an extended PDR, which will then also cause a delay in season 22, in the launch of that. And so, you know, I guess that we probably would see that PTR around mid-September, which of course it's September 16th as recording of this episode. You know, so probably, you know, I think that you know, every day that goes by, the odds of seeing that PTR pop up are going to increase, you know, substantially. And so we'll probably. Probably hoping, you know, by the next episode, which at the current rate of things will be November 30th, or November 30th, September 30th. I'm getting ahead of myself on that one. I hope that we have the PTR by November 30th. If we don't, man, that things have really gone wrong. But yeah, I would think that by the next episode that we will have that PTR. We'll have a look into what they have planned, you know, what they're going to follow up season 21 with, you know, what they're going to do now that all of the classes have their sets. We're going to, you know, which classes are they going to focus on doing the tuning or the balancing, and you know what the developers can go and come up with, you know, since the whole kind of proc based seasonal themes haven't really seemed to go through and hit over too well, which I'll be, you know, looping back to later on in the episode. And then also, we still do not yet have the quarter 3 D4 developer blog update, which, you know, September is the last month in quarter 3. We've got you know, roughly about 2 more weeks, in order to go through and get that. And so again, I believe that we will probably have that developer update, you know, by the time of the next episode. And to just add that little caveat, if we do have that developer update, you know, before September 30th, I do plan on doing a episode like I did for the Q2, where we'll put aside the news for a second. I'll just go through and record an episode with my thoughts and feelings, you know, specifically on that developer blog. Though unlike the last one, you know, where I waited until the next Wednesday to record, you know, even if I have to do it offline and then upload it to YouTube and Twitch later, I'll probably try and make a commitment to record an episode, if not the day of, then the next day of whenever we get the D4 blog update, just so that way I can try and get, you know, my thoughts and my feelings, you know, out there, you know, right out the gate. I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, they promised a bit more meatier topics, you know, in this one. They know that they're tracking the conversations on social media and stuff about the things and the topics that the players want to hear, and that they want to focus in a little bit more, you know, on the meatier topics, you know, itemization, skills, in-game, stuff like that. Not quite sure, you know, which one that they have picked for this one. They haven't given any hints one way or the other. I look forward to it. I really, really look forward to whatever it is that they've got planned for that one. And of course, no real updates on Diablo Immortal either. I know that on one of the popular Eastern kind of like app stores, TapTap, it recently just hit over 1 million pre-orders, or pre-reservations. You know, and that's just one particular service. No idea what they have going on the Play Store or on the App Store. Last rumor that we heard is that the internal development had kind of wrapped up. But then there's also been updates to like the App Store and the Play Store listings, which usually coincides with some sort of update on the back end, which may or may not have to do with like developer builds, you know, where that they release a developer build, you just have to have either like your account flagged or a specific link, you know, with which to go through and access it in the background or something along those lines. Again, mobile is not my forte, and you know, I'll leave those topics over for Echo and such. For someone that is more in tune with how things happen, you know, on mobile, which if you haven't already, if you're interested in Diablo Immortal, please go through and check out Echo Gaming. He has a YouTube channel dedicated entirely to Diablo Immortal, and he is so excited about that game. He's covered probably every single conceivable topic that you can cover about the game without actually having the game to be released. So go ahead and check him out if you haven't. The final thing, as I had mentioned, you know, just a little bit, which again, sorry for delaying the topic, but season 21, you know, a pretty divisive season. There was a lot going on that a lot of people were not too pleased with. You know, Leviathan, he went through, he did the season opener and then kind of, hung up Diablo 3 for a little while, and he has since gone through and like come back, but he's not even playing season. He's just done. He doesn't want to do it. Doesn't want to handle it. A lot of other big names within the Diablo 3 community, you know, kind of hit a particular goal, like grinding out a solo 150, and then that was it for their season. To kind of go along with that, Icy Veins actually hosted a small discussion topic between, you know, two of the preeminent theory crafters within the Diablo 3 community, Deadset and SVR, and it's a pretty interesting read. I'll go ahead and provide a link, you know, in chat as well as in the description down in the YouTube video. But it, you know, it's a, they go back and forth, you know, kind of laying out how the season mechanics worked, you know, some of the issues that arose, you know, how the mechanic became gamey, how it was kind of like didn't flow well with how the game itself is normally played. And so I definitely suggest that you go through, give the full piece a read through. It also is a little bit of a in-depth look at how some of these, you know, these big theory crafters, you know, look at the game and how they tackle, you know, figuring out the systems and mechanics to see what is best. But I will at least go through and kind of like read the conclusions, you know, that they came to. And these will sound pretty familiar because these are, you know, these are thoughts and opinions that a lot of people within the community themselves have had. So in conclusion, Deadset says, there is depth to be found in Season 21's mechanics and what they bring to the game. Certainly an argument can be made that it forces you to play differently, to think differently of the things that you can do in a greater Rift pushing attempts, which has always been the highlight of hard content in Diablo 3, the proving ground for your heroes. In my book, however, the shift from the intrinsic qualities of the ARPG genre, gradual character development, set legendary item interactions, proactive use of abilities and their synergy, into a thinly veiled management of timers is the wrong one to make. I greatly appreciate the practice of themed seasons in the additional developer thought and effort that's spent. But in the future, I'd be happy to see more player control and agency over the things happening on the screen. SVR's concluding thought is, unfortunately, the Season 21 theme, while not technically an exploit, nominally behaves the same way as an exploit in its current iteration. No amount of time investment scales your character's capabilities in GRs. While this is not entirely true and definitely an over-exaggerated statement, since you still get tankier and can increase your non-theme damage output, the core of the issue remains the same. There is no reason to play besides the playing of the Season 1 theme itself until you clear Greater Rift 150 with it. To me, this fundamentally breaks the Diablo 3 and GR progression is about, the journey of your character's progression. And, you know, that is, of course, you know, the biggest complaint is that you play the theme and you don't play your character, that it takes, you know, any sense of accomplishment or progression out of your own hands, and, you know, much akin to what the Season 19 theme was, is that you're playing the theme, not your character. Your character largely doesn't matter. And you know that's pretty much like a nice way to kind of round out Season 21 with kind of like the look and the thoughts. And I also appreciate the fact that, you know, you've got two of these really big names within the community that are well known for analyzing the game, figuring out all these mechanics. I swear SVR, you know, probably knows as much about the game mechanics as the developers themselves do. Limited only by the things that he can test without actually having access to the game code. The man is a Diablo genius, so to say. But I do want to go through and close out with something at least a little bit more fluffy. And with that, these past couple of weeks, people have finally started receiving their Lilith statues, which, you know, was slightly delayed from their original expected launch back in August, which, you know, with the whole pandemic and all that going on, it makes sense. But again, sorry for the delay. And here you go through and have the kind of a size comparison of the box that Lilith comes in, because it's one thing to like read measurements on the screen. It's another one to actually see it. I at least have at least somewhat of a unique perspective that when you say that the statue is 2 feet in height, because of going and playing Warhammer, where that is a very important and popular measurement, as your tables are normally made up of either mats or 2-foot by 2-foot boards, you know, put together in order to form your play space. I have a pretty good understanding of what, you know, 24 inches is. And so I knew that that thing was going to be ginormous, and I'm still, you know, trying to figure out how exactly or where exactly in the apartment I'm going to put this thing. But it is, it's just massive, and I cannot wait You know, if you were at last year's BlizzCon, you got a chance to go and see the early rendering. So they did have kind of like a prototype of this model, you know, available to like go through and look at downstairs at the BlizzCon, like the Blizzard shop. But you know, there was no information about it. It wasn't painted. It was just a pure resin. I think it was also slightly larger. It was a little bit more than 2 feet in size. So it was a little bit larger than what the final product itself was, because we didn't get told that this was coming until a while after BlizzCon. I'm expecting mine in October. You know, it's been delayed a couple of times, and I got email from them, you know, stating sorry about the delay, which I at least appreciate. But I definitely look forward to going through and having my home graced by the Daughter of Hatred once I figure out a place to go through and put it. And you probably might have seen earlier that I've got a little Malthiel statue sitting back there, Ragnaros, and then I've got a Crusader that's still sitting in the box because I just haven't been able to figure out where to put these damn things. And so that has kind of led to conversations. You know, it's like, maybe we should get a bigger apartment, you know, just so that way I have a room to put all of my Diablo crap. And it's not the reason to open with. Definitely not the reason to open with when you're trying to, you know, convince your girlfriend about, you know, getting a bigger apartment. But that's a conversation for another time, of course. And with that, it kind of goes through and brings me to the end of the episode. I thank you all for going through and joining with me here tonight, you know, or, you know, listening on iTunes, Stitcher, you know, watching the video on YouTube. It's always nice to go through and, you know, read your comments here in chat, interact with you guys, go through, you know, check some of the comments and reviews, you know, on the various podcasting platforms, what have you. Or, of course, just interacting, you know, with you all on, you know, Twitter, social media, and things of that nature. And I do want to leave with a question. You know, over the last couple of episodes, last couple of months, you know, I was going and reading through the Sinwar trilogy of Diablo books and just wanted to kind of throw out an idea. You know, would anybody be interested in a pseudo Diablo book club? You know, where we might get together like once a month or something like that, in order to read and discuss, you know, the books or lore in general or something along those lines. It's a little bit harder, you know, for the podcast format with which to go and talk about lore without a very specific topic in mind to go and line out. And that's something that, you know, I've been weighing in the background, trying to work on and such, is maybe like launching my own YouTube channel with which to do kind of like a more of a lore focused series, you know, where I can go and put out topics. But I also, I've always enjoyed that community aspect, you know, with the podcasts. I think those videos and those type of channels and such kind of lack. And so I was looking at trying to figure out some sort of middle ground and in between. And you know, after reading the books and such, I thought maybe a book club or something similar to that would be cool, where we could have regular meetups to discuss lore and stuff, which then that those discussions can later, you know, become a video or a topic, you know, either on the show or, you know, this hypothetical YouTube channel that I might do, with which to share that lore and that passion with others. So if that's something that interests you, by all means, you know, either, you know, let me know here in chat, you know, as part of the after show, or, you know, just drop me a line, you know, for the either, you know, the email of the show, which is, of course, you know, the westmarchworkshop at blizzpro.com. You know, by all means, if you have any other questions, not just that, you know, drop me a line at westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. You know, or you can also hit me up on Twitter, you know, either at NineBallGamer for my personal account or at the WM Workshop, you know, for the official account of the show, which if you want to know, you know, if the show itself is getting delayed, you know, or if I'm going to be recording a surprise episode or what have you, you should definitely want to go through and check out, you know, at the WM Workshop on Twitter, you know, for the most up-to-date, you know, live airings of the episodes and when they get uploaded on, you know, YouTube and other things of that nature. But of course, you can always go through, catch me out here every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/blizzpro. You can also find the show on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher. I think we're on like SoundCloud and some other things that JR does a fantastic job going through and making sure that, you know, all the podcasts get uploaded to like almost every conceivable platform that you could possibly think of that is out there. And so with that, again, thanks for joining me here. Thanks for listening, and I will catch you all next time.